The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Time for Capital Thinking, where we analyze the key policy, political, legal, and business issues that will shape America's future. Live from Washington, D.C., this is your unfiltered tour of the halls of power. Now, here's your host, Kevin O'Neill.
Welcome to another edition of your favorite guilty pleasure, Capital Thinking. I am your Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, guiding your sleigh for the next hour, Brett Boyles, sitting in for your regular host, Kevin O'Neill. Kevin will be appearing in the Williamsburg Little Theater production of It's a Wonderful Life. Kevin will be reviving the role he claims he was destined to play, Old Man Potter. If you follow Kevin on Twitter, please be sure and use the hashtag SaveTheBaileySavingsAndLoan. So welcome to this edition, this holiday edition of Capital Thinking. Holiday edition, some of you are asking, you didn't hear any Burl Ives or Perry Como crooning your favorite Christmas classics. And we don't have Santa as a guest to answer questions about potential tax implications on gifts he brings your kids. And it's not because we didn't try. Santa's communication shop did get back with us, and apparently he's a little busy right now, and we got no response from the IRS. So maybe they're in their PJs drinking hot cocoa and talking about health care. But I promise, the intellectual banter that you have a front row seat for the next hour is the priceless tax-free gift we like to give you, our loyal listeners. And speaking of giving, the production team has put a gigantic bow on today's show. So stick around for the entire show. We've got more to give away than a Joseph A. Bank Christmas sale. Buckle up. Put your tray tables back in their upright and locked positions. The sleigh is ready to take off. And joining us on our first leg of the journey is a jolly old soul. And he's always on Santa's good list, Frank Simolas. Frank is a partner here at Patton Boggs' D.C. office. And he advises clients on international trade matters, trade law, trade policy, and international trade negotiations. And Frank, that's why we wanted you here today. And you're a veteran of the show, but I got to tell you, there's a lot going on right now with the Trans-Pacific Partnership. And so if you don't mind, Frank, happy holidays to you, and catch us up on what's going on with the TPP.
Sure, happy to, Brett, and happy holidays to you. It's always a pleasure to be on the show with you. I don't think I've been on the holiday show before, so this is quite an honor.
Well, great.
So I'll do my best to give you some tidbits. The latest news, hot off the press, is that the chairman of the Senate Finance Committee, Max Baucus of Montana, has now been named as the next U.S. ambassador to China. Huge implications for foreign policy. Of course, Senator Baucus chairs the committee in the Senate that has jurisdiction over trade issues and has a long, long history of policies affecting China, and he's taken a rather even-handed and sort of modestly pro-trade position as a Democrat in his position as chairman of the Finance Committee.
Right.
That does have implications for something called Fast Track, or TPA, Trade Promotion Authority. Keep in mind, Brett, the TPP and the U.S.-EU talks need to have fast-track authority if they're going to be approved by Congress. That authority expired in 2007. The debate has gone on for years about when this administration is going to finally get behind this issue. And lo and behold, this week there was a cabinet-level meeting Word has gotten out that President Obama is going to make this a major part of his State of the Union address.
Wow.
So we will see a big push, as the White House insiders are calling it. January is fast-track month, at least for the trade nerds like me. Now, Senator Baucus going to China means that one of the great leaders and vote counters and vote getters in the Senate will not be there and not nearly be as effective on the fast-track vote as that goes through the process next year. So there's all kinds of head-scratching about what does this mean for the administration trying to get this authority extended, because without that, we don't have a TPP and we don't have a U.S.-EU deal.
So well, let me ask you this, Frank. You mentioned the loss of Senator Baucus to this this process and how important of a role he has played. So the obvious question to a lot of us political nerds, aside from the trade nerds in town, is who's going to take the lead in the Senate on this? And so that's the first part of the question. The second part of the question is, when we look at a lot of the, really some of the more successful things that the White House has pulled off with Congress, there has been one singular person from the White House has been involved in those things, and that's Vice President Biden.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder, keeping in mind my first part of the question is who's going to lead this charge for the White House? The second part, could Biden have a role in that? And then we'll talk about his recent Asia tour with regards to the TPP talks.
Sure. A lot of very good questions, Brett. You've been doing your homework. I would say, as far as the replacement for Baucus, most people are talking about Senator Wyden as being the spokesman for trade. He's got a slightly different perspective. He's not going to be quite as open trade as Senator Baucus, so that is a little bit of a wrinkle. Stay tuned. Vice President Biden will be extremely influential in this. I think particularly given Baucus's absence, he may be the driving force on behalf of the administration.
And what was his record when he was in the Senate with regards to trade talks?
He was, again, modestly pro-trade.
Okay.
He was not a protectionist. He did look out for American industries, and he did support action against countries he viewed as unfair trade partners. But I think he was well within the bounds of what one consider a reasonable open trade Democrat, if that answers your question.
Yeah, I mean, that's a very fair assessment, and I would agree with your sentiments. I want to go back to the last time that you were on the show, and I believe you were on with Kevin at that time, and you talked about the inclusion of Japan and that being a big step in, at the big boy table, the negotiation table for the TPP. With the ongoing tensions between Japan and China, and now Baucus's Chairman Baucus is newly going to be arriving in China, do you think that the negotiations will be impacted by some of these moving parts?
Yeah, I do, Brett. A couple interesting things. We did talk about Japan last time. Japan is very much part of the TPP, although the news even this morning is that the agricultural interest and members in Congress representing those interests are threatening to oppose TPP if Japan doesn't open up its agricultural market. You go back many years ago to the battles over rice and citrus fruits and things like that. That's all coming back. Now you've got an added complication with Korea saying they'd like to join this TPP club, complicating it further. Korea and Japan aren't really getting along these days.
Well, why did Korea decide choose to play really the waiting game with regards to joining this situation? Kind of a Johnny-come-lately, huh?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, they felt for many, many months that they had a nice package of bilateral trade agreements, and I think what's going on in the South China Sea, what's going on with respect to Japanese tensions, have all led Korea to rethink this process. Now, that has implications politically in the U.S. I'm told by people in the know on the Hill that the status now politically of TPP versus the U.S.-EU trade deal couldn't be further apart. Political sentiment is is sort of coalescing behind the European trade deal. And almost as a mirror image of that, there's more and more skepticism and second thoughts about this Trans-Pacific Partnership. So a little prediction for the new year, Brett. Don't be surprised to see the U.S.-European trade deal start overcoming TPP as this whole fast-track debate unfolds.
Well, we'll mark that down under the Samoa's 2014 prognostication, and we'll have to have you back on the show to see how that works out.
Right, right.
Will Korea's effort to involve China and Japan in a separate three-way trade talk help ease some of the tension that you're talking about?
Well, it's hard to tell right now. That's a good question, because China isn't stupid on the politics of global trade, and they initiated these Asian talks excluding the U.S. Now, they really haven't gone very far, and Korea and Japan have kind of nuzzled up closer to the TPP, but this game is a far way from being concluded, and we're going to have to see how that unfolds. Again, Brett, the tensions between Korea and Japan, the fact that President Park, the new president of Korea, is much more cordial with China now than her predecessor, and therefore you've got this interesting coalition of China and Korea against Japan. That's a little bit too black and white, but that's kind of where things are playing out.
Well, is this going to have any implications to TPP? I mean, you said it was this Asian trade agreement, and the U.S. is obviously not involved. What does this mean for TPP?
Well, I think it's one of those factors that is further clouding up the TPP picture. Once you get China and Japan and Korea bickering among themselves, once you have countries like Vietnam raising more concerns, once you're talking about 12 countries not coming to an agreement, a member of Congress suddenly looks to this nice, comfortable U.S.-EU agreement and sort of a commonality of cultures and traditions and a lot of other things, and far less, you know, the Democrats are looking at labor standards and environmental standards, and here's one trading bloc that has a higher standard on both counts than we do. And I think all of that is giving more support to the EU than to the TPP.
Let's go back, Frank, if we can, to fast-track negotiating.
Yeah.
Any prognostications for what we may see and hear in the 2014 second session of this Congress with regards to getting it done?
Well, the bill everybody has promised will be introduced in January, next month, and I think that will happen. Remember, that was sort of rumored to happen all during 2013, but I think this time it's for real.
Right.
The question is how many members are going to put in their own special provisions dealing with protecting an industry or a negotiating objective that serves one industry's interests. Again, I go back to Baucus leaving. If a chairman can't control his members on keeping a lot of extraneous stuff off what should be, in theory, a clean bill simply extending authority, then it really becomes problematic, Brett, as you know, just kind of watching the general political process of any legislation.
There's no question. Frank, you're great to be on the show. We've got about 30 seconds left. Nobody covers this in town that I know of better than you do. And I know when you hang up the phone with me, you're going to get back on the phone with a number of clients who've got all kinds of questions. If there are folks who are listening to the show today and they've got questions, where can they find you?
Oh, thanks so much, Brett. The email is fsamolis, S-A-M-O-L-I-S, at pattenboggs.com. Phone is 202-457-5244.
Frank, you're the best, man. Appreciate you being on the show. We're headed to break, and when we get back, we're going to take you to Motown. So stick around. Frank, Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Brett.
Thanks.
All the best.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet? Why not? Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for the keywords World Talk Radio. Once you're a part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the World Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for World Talk Radio.
Stay up to date on the latest news out of Washington affecting your business. Check out Patton Boggs' new Capital Thinking blog at capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com. Let one of the world's best legal and political intelligence networks keep you in the loop on the policy developments that matter to you most. Access the network today at capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com. That's capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
If you find yourself under the Klieg lights of a government investigation, you want experience on your side. Patton Boggs has 46 years of it. We've handled some of the biggest white-collar crime cases. Put that experience to work for you.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000. The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Welcome back to Capital Thinking. Brett Boyle sitting in for Kevin O'Neill on this holiday edition of Capital Thinking. I said before we went to break that we're going to take you to Motown next, and we're going to have a fascinating conversation with my friend Jimmy Kemp about Detroit. Jimmy is Patton Boggs, Director of Strategic Business Initiatives. He's also the founder and president of Jack Kemp Foundation, dedicated to the legacy of his father, the late Jack Kemp, who was a nine-term Republican congressman and secretary of HUD under President Bush. Jimmy, you're a veteran of the show, so welcome back. And there's a lot of things going on in Detroit right now, so I was just going to tee this up by asking you, where is Detroit? But we know where Detroit is. So I will rephrase the question. Where is Detroit now since the bankruptcy ruling?
Yeah. Well, getting all the parties on board and figuring out who the opposition is going to be, but getting the most recent bankruptcy declaration, it was not easy, but it absolutely gets tougher from here. Because you have so many.
So that's the good news. It gets tougher from here, right?
It gets tougher from here. I mean, it's not a simple solution, of course, and it's like a Rubik's Cube. But you've got many critical parties who are getting on board with making the bankruptcy as smooth as possible. One of the bondholders, Assured Guaranty, this week, they withdrew their opposition to ending swaps deals and establishing appropriate financing within the bankruptcy. And so that's a key addition. They'd already gotten the retiree committee in Detroit to withdraw their opposition. So they're making progress. Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, has his hands full, but Governor Snyder has him certainly laser focused. And Brett, what one of the most important things, and this is kind of what I believe is important for Detroit and this country and any country or government, it absolutely comes down to leadership. And to see how Mike Duggan, the new mayor in Detroit, and Kevin Orr, the emergency manager, are going to lead is really interesting. Actually, just a few moments ago, there was a report out of Detroit that Mayor Duggan and Orr are going to explain how their cooperative management of the city is going to work. So Orr is still maintaining control of things like the police.
And I think, Jimmy, let me interrupt you. I think you would agree with this because you hit the nail on the head. Leadership is what's going to be required to get this done. But what is paramount in that leadership is communicating what they are doing and making it appear that they are working together. And I think that's an important point you're making.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's critical. Obviously, you've had dysfunctional government in Detroit for far too long. Mayor Bing, God bless him, Brett. He took a dollar salary to be mayor of Detroit after Mayor Kilpatrick.
Right.
And I don't know if you could have paid somebody to do it. He did a great job, but he couldn't finish the job. He couldn't get people to kind of come to their senses and see that there wasn't a path forward. And so, we've ended up with the largest municipal bankruptcy in the country, and a great city is on the ropes.
Let's talk about some of the leadership, Jimmy. Michigan Governor Snyder, I've known some governors, and they're always sensitive to headlines or negative press. But Governor Snyder has been critical of the headlines that are out about Detroit and commenting that they're really misrepresenting the reality of the situation in Detroit. Is that fair? And what do you think about that matter?
The bottom line is that you've got to build a coalition, and as you said earlier, you've got to communicate. There has to be clear communication about who's doing what. And so I take it as a positive sign that Duggan, although he campaigned on, I'm a turnaround guy and I can fix this and we don't need Kevin Orr. I think this is a positive sign that, Duggan and Orr are going to be working together, that the city council needs to understand and accept and work with, both of them. And ultimately that the path forward is to embrace ideas that haven't been tried before, including ideas like enterprise zones. You've got to have incentives to bring businesses back into a city to achieve growth, and they've got to have a structure that can not just deal with the significant challenges of who's owed money, but how you're going to bring money into a city where all the businesses they've left over the years. Now, that said, you've got a bunch of committed folks who have helped bring back downtown Detroit, like Dan Gilbert at Quicken Loans and others. So downtown Detroit is doing well, but it's the rest of the city, which is such a huge area that's provides, the challenges for how you're going to serve and protect such a broad area.
Well, and you talked about some of the things that have to be done in order for Detroit to come back, and I think as a Southerner, and not having spent a whole lot of time in Detroit, there's always been this kind of thought that Detroit's just such a hardworking, blue-collar city. And I go back to the Super Bowl ad that ran last year with Clint Eastwood, and kind of gave you this real gritty Detroit's coming back. Do you think Detroit is situated for a comeback next year? Do you think it's going to be how do you perceive the long term or short term where Detroit is what Detroit used to be?
Well, I believe that any person, any group, any entity can come back. That's part of what makes America great. Is, you know, we all love comeback stories, and forgive me, but a football quarterback just pops into my mind. Peyton Manning's story of coming back from that surgery and performing at the level. That's why he got Sports Illustrated's comeback or their player, their person of the year. And can Detroit come back? Absolutely, it can. Of course, it can. That's what America is. We can learn from our mistakes, but the key is to have leadership that can identify the problems in a way that doesn't, solely place blame at people's feet, but that brings folks together and says, "Hey, we all have to figure out what the best policies are." And Brett, Senator, an unlikely source went up to Detroit a week and a half ago, and he happened to talk about my dad's enterprise zones. And it's Senator Rand Paul, who went up to Detroit and said, "I want to be a part of the solution, and I think the federal government should reduce all individual and corporate taxes inside Detroit to 5%. That will bring money back into the city. It'll bring business and jobs, and then you'll see the other things that are needed, like education and law and order." I mean, I know that Kevin Orr and Mayor Dugan, they've agreed to do some really important things, like taking down tens of thousands of homes and businesses in the city, so that you don't have such a broad area to administer. But you can't just talk about how to fix the finances if you're not growing the economy. And so I was really pleased to hear Senator Paul go up there and talk about some growth ideas.
Absolutely, absolutely. We'll leave it to a Kemp to come up with a quarterback analogy. so we appreciate that. Let me ask this question. Congress was finally able to reach a bipartisan budget deal.
Yeah.
And the new deal going through 2015, ideally it's there to help build the economy and stabilize things, including cities like Detroit. Is that accurate to say, or are things in there that are tantamount to Detroit's comeback?
I think our nation's finances our nation should learn from the mistakes of Detroit, and it's why personally I'm a huge supporter and fan of Chairman Ryan, because he wants to seriously look at our spending and wants to help people understand how where we are financially is not sustainable. But it's not a gloom and doom message. You can't lead with that, Brett. So I do think that this a budget agreement, it bodes well. Is it going to help fix Detroit? Well, heck, if we're going to wait on this budget deal to fix Detroit, that's going to take a long time. We need some innovative strategies. We need there's already a lot of enthusiasm in Detroit, and there are some great stories, but those need to spread, and the equality of opportunity is key here. You've got to have the minority community involved and optimistic and hopeful. So it's going to be really interesting to watch how Governor Snyder, Mayor Dugan, and Kevin Orr engage the folks in Detroit who've invested and been there for a long time, how they're going to bring them on board and build minority businesses. I mean, that's the opportunity here, is that people who've never had businesses before, they should really have a unique opportunity to invest in and build businesses that can be the center of Detroit's future. And you got to believe It's
Jim, we've got about 30 seconds left, and I want to get you on record. Frank Simolas was our previous guest, and I know you do a lot of shows. I've seen you on Kudlow on CNBC from time to time. Any predictions you want to make for 2014, whether it's Detroit or Congress, that we can put you on the record and have you back and we can check your predictions?
Let's see. I don't have a prediction for Detroit. I don't know what the timing will be.
Hey, maybe it could just be a new name. You know, they've got Motown, they've got Hockey Town. Maybe they could just be the Comeback City or the Comeback Kids.
Yeah, they could come up with something. Politically, you know, I really believe that if the Republicans pursue a path to govern and provide solutions and promote solutions, I think that is going to be the difference, because I believe that the country is hungering for solutions, not just politicians who are saying what they're against.
And leadership, and you said that to start the segment. It's a great place to end the segment. Jimmy Kemp, you're fantastic. Thanks for being on the show, and have a Merry Christmas.
Thanks, Brett. You too.
We're going to break, and we'll be right back with some WOW, W-O-W. See you in a minute.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iRadioBlog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hola. Konnichiwa.
Bonjour.
Hello.
From Anchorage to Abu Dhabi.
Merhaba.
From Denver to Doha.
Ciao.
Patton Boggs makes business transactions the world over.
Oi.
Rely on our insights for your next deal. Patton Boggs, the international business team. Straight, unfiltered, Patton Boggs.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
Stay up to date on the latest news out of Washington affecting your business. Check out Patton Boggs' new Capital Thinking blog at capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com. Let one of the world's best legal and political intelligence networks keep you in the loop on the policy developments that matter to you most. Access the network today at capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com. That's capitalthinking.pattonboggs.com.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
The same firm that's been navigating the government maze for more than four decades is also the same firm that can help you protect your most important assets. Whether it's a valuable patent, an important copyright, or your next big idea, Patton Boggs is committed to protecting your intellectual property.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network. Live from Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, @pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Welcome back to Capital Thinking, the holiday edition. And I am Brett Boyle, sitting in for Kevin O'Neill. And remember, you can catch Kevin at the Williamsburg Little Theater as Old Man Potter. I know all of you will be lined up to see that production. I ended the last segment by saying that this segment and the next, we've got back-to-back segments with WOW, W-O-W. And that is Women of Washington. And I am tickled to death to be joined on this holiday show by four ladies who I've gotten to know very well by working with them. But you're going to get to know them, too, and because I'm going to get to brag on them, and maybe they'll brag about themselves, if not maybe each other. I am joined today by Marty Kendrick, Norma Cram, Karen Frederes, and Dana Weeks. And so the last half of the show, we want to have a conversation with these ladies about their accomplishments and why they were recently recognized and nominated for the 2013 Excellence in Advocacy Awards presented by Women in Advocacy. Now, Marty and Dana not only were nominated, they're also award recipients. Marty for the Veteran Practitioner Award and Dana with an honorable mention in the Excellence in Advocacy by an up-and-coming practitioner. So we've got the veterans and the rookies and everything in between. And so I am just, I'm giddy to have you all here. So welcome to the show, ladies, and happy holidays.
Thank you. Happy holidays to you, too.
Happy holidays.
Thank you. So why don't we do this? Because it's the first time I've ever had four people on at one time. So I will try and establish some order. And I feel a little bit like Charlie from Charlie's Angels with the ladies on the phone, and here I am on the phone, but we'll try to work through this. Marty, if we can start with you, tell our audience what category, I mentioned it, but what you were nominated for and just something about the award.
Sure. The award is the Excellence in Advocacy Award, and I am thrilled and honored and humbled to be selected as the honoree in the veteran category. And so I think that might be another way of saying I'm a little older, but it was a wonderful honor for the firm, and particularly the I accept the award really in the name of so many others in at Patton Boggs who have worked with and teamed with me over the years.
Well, that's a selfless and very team-oriented approach, and that was very nice of you. Norma, tell us about your nomination.
Sure. I was nominated in the category. It was Excellence in Federal Advocacy, which, let's say, Marty, maybe that was the middle age category. But as Marty said, really we work in a team approach here, and the award that I was nominated for really focused on trying to bring a little bit of common sense approach back to some of the federal decision-making on the Hill and in the government, which I'm very proud of.
Taryn, tell us about yours.
Sure. So I was in the newbie category along with Dana. I was nominated in the up-and-coming practitioner category. It's my nomination is a testament to the opportunities I've been able to secure here at Patton Boggs in the International Trade Sovereign Representation and Defense Practice Group.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
And Dana.
Yes, as Taryn said, I was nominated and received honorable mention for the up-and-coming practitioner, and it was recognition of my work in both agriculture policy and higher education. But as Taryn says, it's also a testament, I think, to the firm in the work that we do at Patton Boggs and how it's truly a collective effort in the investment that they put in my and other associates' professional development.
Well, those are really outstanding achievements for all of you all, and to put it in practical terms for those of you who don't live in Washington, I would just juxtapose this as you all have, in a sports metaphor, and you all have been named All-Americans, and so that speaks very highly of the work you do on behalf of your clients. And you don't want to look at this as a competition, but there is an award, and someone gets an award, and someone doesn't. But let me ask you, how do each of you feel about competitions like this? Because, you know, in so many other segments of professional life, there are these awards, and necessarily in the lobby world, there hasn't been this kind of recognition before. So, Dana, let me get your thoughts on that.
Sure, Brett. So I find it interesting. I guess I wouldn't necessarily call it a competition because I actually don't believe in competition. I believe that everyone has value add, and sometimes your value is recognized at a higher level or more publicly than other people's value. And I, at this point in the game, my value add was just recognized. But what I will say is that Marty and I and others have the opportunity of attending the reception where we got to mingle with the other nominees, and in particular, Rachel Fay, who was also an honorable mention in the category of up-and-coming practitioner. We just had a wonderful discussion about what we've done over the years, our best practices, and, you know, we plan on continuing to having to develop that relationship to learn from each other as well. And so I think in the policy world, especially as it comes to women, women tend to be, studies show, a bit more collaborative in how they approach their work. And so I think this is just another opportunity for someone I would not typically get to meet because she works in a completely different field than I do, to kind of share our best practices and help each other, build each other up so that, you know, we can help each other with future recognitions going forward.
Dana, I think you made an interesting point in talking about the approach that females may take with regards to kind of a team-building angle on this, and I'll ask each of you this. Was it encouraging to see such strong representation in the female practitioners? And Marty, I'll start with you.
Sure, Brett. You know, I have always perceived that women have probably been underrepresented a bit in terms of recognition lists on top advocacy, top lobbyists in Washington in virtue of, you know, in various, you know, lists and pronouncements that come out. So what was really exciting about this event was the synergy and the camaraderie and just, you know, I think genuine excitement on the part of a very large number of women who were in the room and, you know, obviously enjoying and learning from each other and also, you know, celebrating women in advocacy. It was a wonderful event. It was very exciting. And I think we were, you know, particularly thrilled for the recognition for our firm.
Yeah, and let me interrupt because I want to get some other thoughts from the rest of you all on the same question. But and I did not mention, aside from the four of you, Rosemary, Becky, and Monica Desai were also nominated, and they're also folks that work here at Patton Boggs. So, you know, half a dozen folks from one shop speaks volumes, I mean, just volumes about the work that you all are doing. Norma, your thoughts on the encouragement of seeing women in this kind of being represented and being nominated and awarded for these activities?
Bottom line, it's fantastic. I mean, we do see women working in the lobbying field and in the broader advocacy field in a host of sectors, very technical, very challenging. And to Marty's point, seeing them being recognized, I think is the right thing to do. And honestly, I was just so proud of all of our colleagues and to hear of the pieces is Dana talked about meeting others. That's really the way that it needs to go, and I'm pleased that we're finally seeing that come about.
And Taryn, kind of the same question, but I think Marty made an interesting point about you don't always see women acknowledged in this field. And is that, do you think, practically because Washington still has that kind of stiff old boy network kind of unfortunately, that's just the way it's seen sometimes, and it's not accurate, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, from my perspective, you know, that has changed a bit. I mean, I certainly haven't necessarily felt as though I haven't gotten, you know, opportunities in light of my gender. But that being said, I mean, particularly in my field, foreign policy, although we've had, you know, notable female foreign policy leaders, it still certainly, from my perspective, continues to be a bit of the old boys kind of backroom network. And I think women are, you know, certainly breaking in, and particularly, you know, I have to recognize the Marty and Norma and other female leaders at our firm that have really supported the younger women at Patton Boggs in kind of making our mark here in Washington.
We've got just about 30 seconds left in this segment, and I want to have you guys stay around for the next segment if you can. I know having won these awards, now you feel obligated to do more and more work for your clients, and I'm sure your clients will appreciate that. But Taryn, with you still, you mentioned the foreign policy work that you've been. How did you get involved in advocacy?
Yeah, so So I'm from Iowa, a small town, and went to school there, but always knew I wanted to be involved in politics and foreign policy, but really also had an interest in the law. And so I was doing research on firms, and that's really, you know, Patton Boggs' bread and butter is the intersection of policy and law, and it was started as an international firm, so I knew it was you know, the right firm for me, and I was lucky enough to be able to come here as a summer associate and come back as a first-year associate. And once I got here and realized that the firm offered the work that I do, which is mostly international trade and then representing foreign governments, I just found it fascinating and worked hard to continue to work in that area, and then was blessed to have a number of very interesting clients in the last few years that I've been here.
We're going to head to break right now. Stick around, and we will have more with the winners in this 2013 season. Be right back. Thanks.
Your favorite Voice America Talk Radio Network shows and hosts are in your car, outdoors, and wherever you need them to be.
Listen anywhere.
Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Hear ye, hear ye. The House will come to order.
Having trouble sorting out what's going on Capitol Hill? Patton Boggs can cut through it all. We've got the insight, the know-how, the connections to navigate. Patton Boggs. Straight, unfiltered. Patton Boggs, a bipartisan voice with knowledge and 46 years of experience.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
Interrogatories.
Prima facie.
Pleadings.
Motion for summary judgment.
E-discovery.
Affirmative defense.
Stipulations.
Ex parte.
Amicus brief.
Subpoena.
Litigation is confusing. Trust the litigation team at Patton Boggs to make sense of it all.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
The following is a paid advertisement from Patton Boggs, LLP.
From K Street to Wall Street to LaSalle Street, the Patton Boggs team knows how to pull off big business transactions. Come hear what we know. Patton Boggs covers the world.
Edward Newberry, attorney at law, is responsible for the content of this ad. Patton Boggs' principal office is located at 2550 M Street Northwest in Washington, D.C., 20037. You may contact Patton Boggs at 202-457-6000.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
From Washington, it's Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. Join us on the program and weigh in on the topics discussed with your question or comment. The toll-free number is 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also direct your questions or comments via email to koneill@pattonboggs.com. That's koneill, O-N-E-I-L-L, at pattonboggs.com. Now, back to Capital Thinking.
Welcome back to Capital Thinking. Brett Boyle sitting in for Kevin O'Neill on this holiday show. And by the way, this is our last show for the year. So if you've got on your calendar next Thursday penciled in to listen to our show, you'll have to listen to our competition on any of the cable network outlets who are trying to compete desperately with the ratings that we get here at Capital Thinking. But I'm sure you'll find something to do. I'm joined again in the last segment of the year by Marty Kendrick, Norma Cram, Taryn Frieders, and Dana Weeks. And if you missed or tuned in late, these ladies have all been nominated and awarded recently for the 2013 Excellence in Advocacy Awards presented by Women in Advocacy. And when we left the last segment, Taryn, you were telling us about how you got involved in advocacy. And Marty, We'll go back to you. How did you get involved in this this work that has become your life now?
I am a second career lawyer. I started at Georgetown Law School when my oldest child was 3 weeks old, a baby, and after graduating from Georgetown, I decided to focus in the health area because of my background at the Department of Health and Human Services, which I worked before and during law school. So I got involved in the health area substantively at a very early point, building my legal career on the career that I previously had at HHS. And the advocacy opportunities opened up for me when I started at Patton Boggs, and we started to build a health legislative and regulatory practice. I must say, probably earliest advocacy for me was in the form of volunteer commitments in the community.
Sure.
I'm past president of the Junior League of Washington, and received a lot of training and a lot of advocacy kind of support on women and children issues early on, and so it was a natural kind of bridge.
Dana, same question to you. How did you get involved? And I'm kind of add a second question to that. Taryn mentioned that she was always involved in foreign policy. Tell us about how you got involved in advocacy, and was your area now of expertise something that you were always interested in, or did you fall into it by accident?
Sure, Brett. So I took about four and a half years off before going to law school. And during that time, I had worked in kind of grassroots organizing and done a lot with public policy. I'd actually started out my career and fell into it in the whole election law, election arena. And so I did a lot of grassroots organizing, and I also did a lot of work for organizations and was also on some presidential and special election campaigns as well. And during that time, I met a number of Patton Boggs folks. At one point, I was like, everywhere I turn, there's a Patton Boggs person, whether it was at a community organization and they're on the board, or whether it was on the campaign, or whether I was at some kind of conference. And I realized during my time before going to law school that I had a love for grassroots organizing, I had a love for policy, and I had a love for legal analysis, as well as kind of the PR communications perspective, how you build and profile a client and expertise area. And so I knew that in my career and entering law school that I wanted to wear all four of those hats. And I wanted to do it in an environment where people were also used to wearing all four of those hats as well. So I knew before going to law school that I wanted to go to Patton Boggs. And true story, I bet all my lottery points when we had interviews at the University of Virginia School of Law. I bet all of my lottery points on Patton Boggs to ensure I got an interview, and the rest is history.
Oh, that's a great story. That's a great story.
I was very, very lucky and blessed for that opportunity. But at the same time, how I got into then from election protection to voting rights to election law, how I got into the whole area of agriculture, because it seems so logical.
That's right.
In higher education. For agriculture policy, I actually fell into it. There was a great associate firm by the name of Nicole Nice, who now works for a client of the firm, who became my mentor, and I enjoyed working with her, and I enjoyed the client so much that I kind of adopted and now am in love with agriculture policy. And then higher education and education issues has always been kind of my pet project, my pet love throughout the years. And so I kind of made that known to Kevin O'Neill and have been working with him since my second year to help really develop here at the firm an education practice. And so I can say now that I'm engaging in both of my two loves kind of moving forward. So that's how it happened.
Well, that's a great story. Norma, I turn to you, and I know your background, but because I've had the pleasure of working with you and sharing some clients with you, but a lot of folks don't. Tell us how you ended up in advocacy and doing what you're doing today.
Sure. I actually started my career in public service and pursued that for many, many years, first for the state of Connecticut in the Speaker's office, and then I worked in four federal agencies, the U.S. Departments of Commerce, State, a consultant at FEMA, and then at the U.S. Department of Transportation. And really for me, I believe and still believe in the appropriate role of government, but I also thought that working within both state and federal government, that the role that I needed to bring to bear was to, I keep saying, add that dose of common sense and maybe remind those in government that people want to believe in and trust in their government, but in order to do that, you actually need to understand that you're providing a service to the American taxpayer or in the state of Connecticut, the Connecticut taxpayer. And to me, it was a mix of both substance and politics and service, using service really in all the ways that it means. And that was something that I very much believed in and still do. Certainly when you work in the government, it's not about how much money you make because you don't. It's about working long, long hours and making sure that you feel like you are fixing problems that need to be fixed. And when you're in a big organization, that can be challenging. So for me, I was young, still young, eager and willing to work a 18-hour day, and that was important to me. And when you'd go home, whether when I was in the federal government or working for the Speaker of the House, you go home to your local community store and you buy a loaf of bread and a gallon of milk, and you still want to know how you fix those potholes. So
yeah,
for me, easy transition into what I do now.
Ladies, we've got 1 minute left. And with the last minute, I want to put you on the spot, and I give you a choice of one or two questions, but just a one-word or one-sentence answer. Either give a piece of advice to another young lady who's working in advocacy, or make a prediction for 2014 that we can write down and have you back on the show next year. Taryn, I'll start with you.
Oh. I would say a piece of advice. I would just, especially coming from, you know, a small town in Iowa, being new to Washington, I would tell anybody, particularly women that are coming to Washington, for the first time, to just, you know, follow your goals and don't give up and be persistent and a hard worker, and you'll get where you want to go.
Good advice. Dana, piece of advice or a prediction?
My piece of advice is that remember that everything you do contributes to your professional development. So engage where you love and in the work that you do, because we are all 360 well-rounded professionals, and it will all come together once you have a great support network behind you.
Perfect. Marty?
My advice would be to find something you really love and are interested in, become really good at it in a technical sense, and become a go-to person, and be happy and enjoy what you do. You love and enjoy the legislative process and strategy and strategic thinking and helping people get to where they want to be. If you like helping people and helping organizations who are facing large challenges, advocacy and public policy are just wonderful career tracks.
Great. Norma, last word.
Last word of the day is advice. You know, building on Marty's point, you have that technical expertise, but as a woman, don't be shy, be persistent, be focused, and remember, we all have challenges. Some you will win, some you will lose, but don't ever take those personally. Just keep moving ahead.
Well, I will tee off of what Marty said too, and love what you do, and I love the fact that I get to work with these nominees and winners. It just makes the place a lot happier, and I really appreciate the work that you all do to make Patton Boggs a great place to be. Thanks for being on the show, ladies. Everyone, have a happy holidays, what's left of the rest of the year, and we will see you in 2014. Thanks so much for listening to Capital Thinking.
Thank you for joining us for Capital Thinking with your host, Kevin O'Neill. We hope to have you join us again for more insight from Washington. We're here every Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern, on the Voice America Business Network.